every day. If you tell a child and do your best to prove to the child that he is not worth life, it is entirely possible that sooner or later the child begins to believe it.
That's James Baldwin speaking in June of 1963, that audio from the Pacifica Radio Archives. In this last minute we have with you, Ta-Nehisi Coates, where have we come in more than half a century?
I think there's been some progress. I think if people like me appear impatient, it is with the fact that, you know, we are talking about a system that has basically been in place since 1619. Progress is good, but until, you know, we live in a country in which white supremacy has been banished, until we live in a country where one can look at, you know, prisons if we ought to have them and not see an 8-to-1 ratio, until we can, you know, look at a country and not, you know, see black men comprising roughly 8% of the world's, you know, imprisoned population, until, you know, we can, you know, have a situation in which, you know, I can turn on the news or come on this show and be able to discuss other things besides, you know, Sandra Bland being threatened with being, you know, to light her up, as he said, over a turn signal, until we have a situation in which Tamir Rice, you know, who's out playing, you know, is not, you know, effectively committing a lethal crime, you know, a crime that threatens his life. You know, until we have a situation where, you know, Kajimi Powell, for mere fact of being mentally ill, is not shot down in the street, until we have, you know, a situation in which, you know, John Crawford, you know, who is shopping in Walmart, is not shot down and executed in a store. Progress is nice, but it's, you know, to be noted, and the struggle continues after that.
Ta-Nehisi Coates, we thank you so much for being with us. National correspondent for The Atlantic. His book is called Between the World and Me. That does it for our broadcast. If you'd like a copy of the show, you can go to democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Hani Massoud, Rabbi Karen, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Juan Carlos Davila, Pedro Rodriguez. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Special thanks to Mike DiFilippo, Miguel Noguera.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:02. Coming up next is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio with our host, Paul Rowland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of 70 years after Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the ever-present nuclear threat, Thursday, August 6th, at the Japanese American Historical Plaza at Waterfront Park in Portland. 70 years after Hiroshima and Nagasaki will feature speakers and performers, including Portland Taiko, and will provide opportunities for attendees to get involved in efforts to abolish nuclear weapons. That's 70 years after Hiroshima and Nagasaki. The ever-present nuclear threat, Thursday, August 6th, 6 p.m. at the Japanese American Historical Plaza at Northwest NATO Parkway and Cooch Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 23rd annual Clinton Division Street Fair Saturday, July 25th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. with an after party on Clinton Street from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. The community parade, Metamorphosis, will start at 10:45 a.m. There will also be artisan, craft, and community booths, sidewalk sales, live music, food, and more. Again, that's the 23rd annual Clinton Division Street Fair, Saturday, July 25th, from 10 to 5 p.m., with an after-party on Clinton Street going until 9 p.m. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Montevilla Jazz Festival, Saturday, August 15th and Sunday, August 16th at Portland Metro Arts. The Montevilla Jazz Festival showcases the best of Portland-based artists, including the Alan Jones Sextet, the Ed Bennett Quintet, Machete Order, and Portland Jazz Composers Ensemble, and many more. Again, that's the Montevilla Jazz Festival, Saturday, August 15th, and Sunday, August 16th at Portland Metro Arts, 9003 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at KBOO.FM on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Window, as far as you can see, this beautiful country is our heredity. The way that we find it, the way we pass it on, the way that we remember. When we have come and gone, with the fire in the forest, we can't just let it burn. No one can do it for us, this much I've learned. There's a fire in the forest. Oh, the glory days of our material embrace have given us the destiny that we now must come to face, a monumental crossroads with no time left to borrow. And the choice we make today will be the world we get tomorrow. And there's a fire in the forest, we can't just let it burn. No one can do it for us, this much I've learned. There's a fire in the forest. Can you drink your water? Can you breathe your air? Is there an unendangered species anywhere? Is there a land unthreatened by this historical machine? Is there a better vision? Can we find it in our dream? With the fire in the forest, we can't just let it burn. And no one can do it for us, this much I've learned. With the fire in the forest. Talk about the future. Talk about a million years. Talk about the mothers and the grandchildren. Talk about the cycles, laughter and tears. Talk about the bridge we're building. Don't burn the bridge we're building. Time is running out. The way it seemed to me, with one foot on shaky ground and the other in eternity, we're standing at the threshold. We're opening the door, and either we survive it or we go down like a dinosaur. Into the fire in the forest, we can't just let it burn. And no one can do it for us, this much I've learned. There's a fire in the forest. Talk about the future. Talk about a million years. Talk about the mothers and the grandchildren. Talk about the cycles, laughter and tears. Talk about the bridge we're building. Don't burn the bridge we're building.
And good morning, Portland, Willamette Valley, Columbia River Gorge, and wherever else you might be listening to this program and my voice right now or at some future time. My name is Paul Ruland, and yes, I am back in town. And just want to thank Doug McKay and Lisa Loving and anybody else who might have substituted for me while I was gone. I really appreciate that. I'm sure you did a bang-up job. Wasn't actually able to listen to anything on KBOO. I was extremely busy for the past month plus, helping my mom move out of her place back in Maryland and helping her move out here. So if you're listening, hi, Mom. Anyway, drove across this amazingly large country of ours in 8 days. Saw some of the incredible bioregional diversity through the eastern forest, such as it is, as you see it from the freeway, through the amazing Wisconsin country, through the Minnesota Lake country, through the Great Plains of North Dakota, amazing Montana, down across the Rocky Mountains, and into the Pacific Northwest. Got to see some traces of the wildfires that are raging, which is why I played that song by our great Northwest Cascadian artist, Jim Page. along with Billy Oske, Mark Ettinger, and Scott Law from their release Head Full of Pictures from 2007. If you had never gotten a chance to see Jim Page live, please do. He's still performing, lives up in the Seattle area, and gets down here now and then. Let's maybe try to get a KBOO sponsored event with Jim Page. That would be great. So we're going to be talking about it's what is now being called a historic drought here in Cascadia, to go along with the historic drought in California and parts of the Southwest. It's a dire situation that we're facing, and I don't think we're prepared for it. Do you? Number here is 503-231-8187. I'd like to talk about, there's so much to talk about. The legacy that Jim Page talks about, the legacy that was talked about on Democracy Now! This morning, legacy of white supremacy and slavery and racism and colonialism and so much that is all linked together. How do we confront it all? It seems so vast. And in real time, it is devastating our lives and the planet. And it's also hard to talk about this heavy stuff here between 8 and 9 in the morning. Don't know when a good time is, but this is one time where we have an open forum for discussion. We encourage people to engage in some collective thinking, to encourage greater discussions to the extent that we are able through this medium here. And we do need more public forums, more public discussions. And as Jim Page says, no one can do it for us. Is there a better vision? I wouldn't mind talking about Pope Francis as well. I've been going back and forth, you know, no Pope can do it for us. And as of course, as a descendant of Waldensians, if you know who the Waldensians were, they were a medieval heresy who went up against the power of the Pope and survived, believe it or not. and actually, Pope Francis just a few weeks ago apologized for the historic treatment of the Waldensians, because after all, they were hounded and persecuted and burned at the stake and drawn and quartered, some of them anyway. And they fled up into the mountains of northwest Italy, where my father hailed from, and where I actually lived for 14 years. Anyway, it's a very interesting historic coincidence. And then, you know, like the day or two after he apologized to the Waldensians, I met with an old friend of mine, Steve Newcomb, Native American activist who's been leading or part of a project, a really amazing project to get the Catholic Church and the collective powers that be to renounce the doctrine of discovery, which basically set in place the colonial establishment of the world, in essence. I mean, maybe that's a little extreme, but basically gave the first Christian nation to, quote, discover new lands, the right to occupy in the name of God and the Pope, and basically became, believe it or not, the foundation for federal Indian law, and in some sense, and really the foundation of the Constitution and everything that followed in this country. Doctrine of Discovery, look it up. I'll be trying to hopefully interviewing Steve coming up. He's got a new film, Pagans in the Promised Land, I believe is the name of it. And I'll be trying to get that here in Portland. So many things to talk about, as I said, such a legacy to confront. And 503-231-8187. And I do want to mention a bunch of events coming up. And also let you know that if you want to have an event mentioned on this program, at least, and you could write me at Paul R. KBOO altogether, smallcase, at gmail.com. And you can also come in with the copies of flyers of your event and put them in people's boxes here at KBOO out in the front lobby during business hours, 9 to 5 or 7, depending. And so let me give you a few events that are coming up tonight. The Portland Anarchist Black Cross Movie Night at Clinton Street Theater, The Internet's Own Boy. 7 p.m. follows the story of information activist Aaron Swartz. A portion of the funds raised go to Jeremy Hammond, hacktivist and whistleblower currently serving time in prison. That's at the Clinton Street Theater at Southeast Clinton and 26th, as you probably know, since KBOO has movie nights there on a regular basis. The Internet's Own Boy, 7 p.m. More information, freejeremy.net, or go to the Portland ABC Facebook page. Also tonight, Soil Not Oil, focused on the intersection between the crisis of fossil fuels, food security, and climate change. Presentation this evening, 6:30 to 9 p.m. at Tabor Space, 5441 Southeast Belmont. KBOO's own Jen Davis, a great bee activist here in Portland, Jonah Majur of Portland Rising Tide, and Karen Wallasek of Hill House Writers, and Miguel Robles of Biosafety Alliance, videos and songs from the heart with Sarah Wolf, soilnotoilcoalition.org. Tomorrow evening, the Barker Summer Party. That's 5 to 9 p.m. at Bark's new offices at 351 Northeast 18th Avenue. Updates from the forest, food and drinks, live music and performance activities for kids. That's tomorrow evening at the new Bark office, the Forest Defense Group, 351 Northeast 18th. More information at bark-out.org. Also tomorrow, there'll be a debrief and report back of the Portland versus Shell Oil, 7 to 10 p.m. at Laurelhurst Park, not sure exactly where. That's tomorrow evening. Starting today, 3 days of action to stop the Dark Act. I didn't jot down more information, but they have a Facebook page, Stop the Dark Act, if you want to know more about that. And Saturday, Summertime Garden Party, 2 to 5 p.m. at the Peace House. Benefit for Veterans for Peace, Portland Chapter 72, featuring music by David Rovics, with a very special musical guest from England, plus a few words from Lloyd Marbet on Upside Falling Down. Fun food, drink, silent auction. For more information, 503-232-1322. That's this Saturday, 2 to 5 p.m., Summer Garden Party with Dave Rovics and Lloyd Marbet. Peace House is located at 2116 Northeast 18th Avenue. And I'm going to be doing my front desk shift after this, so if you want any more of this information, just call me up after 9 at 503-231-8032 is the front desk number. And finally, Sunday at, in other words, 14 Northeast Killingsworth, 5 to 7 p.m., American Identity Equals White Supremacy workshop explaining the foundation and maintenance of the capitalist system and exactly how the system is unconditionally tied to the ideology and practice of white supremacy, led by local author and activist Ajamu Umi. That's this Sunday at, in other words, 14 Northeast Killingsworth, 5 to 7 p.m. And I also got that off Facebook, so I'm sure you can look up American Identity Equals White Supremacy there as well. They also have a email, Marilyn Buck Abolitionist Collective at riseup.net. That's a lot of stuff happening. Busy week here in Portland. And I was going to read something and talk about some of the stuff, but it looks like we got a caller already. John is on the line. Go ahead, John. Hello? You still there? I guess not. Steve, is John there? Okay. Well, John, call back. 503-231-8187 is the number for anyone who wants to call in. And if you've never called in, please do. We're always looking for new voices, and old voices are also welcome. And this is, a again, a public forum. There's not too many places on the style where you have a local forum on air. This is one of the, perhaps the only really local talk radio. I know X-Ray has Tom Hartman, but it's be hard to get on from Portland since he takes calls from all over the country. So take this opportunity and call in. So a friend of mine sent me a link to an article called Disasters, Both Natural and Weather-Related, displaced 19 million people in 2014. It just came out, this article, July 20th. Natural disasters forced more than 19 million people from their homes in last year, mostly the result of typhoons, flooding, and other weather-related events that are becoming more intense and more frequent, a leading European aid agency said Monday. Close to 90% of the 19.3 million people displaced by natural disasters last year were in Asia, with China, India, and the Philippines particularly hard hit. And of course, here in the Pacific Northwest, as I mentioned, there's a new term called urban wildfires that is out there now because of what's happened in Colorado Springs, San Diego County, and now Spokane, Washington, among other places where, you know, people are just the continual expansion of urban centers into the surrounding forests and other natural areas, the humanization of the landscape and the occupation of more and more ecological niches by our species because of all the familiar dynamics that we know. And so, you know, people are going into areas where a wildfire can strike and burn down a lot of houses. And there was the case of the fire down in Southern California that burned up and exploded a bunch of cars going down a highway. As I said, I was driving down into Cascadia from my drive across country, and I noticed some areas where either side of the highway were burnt. This was I believe it was in Idaho, and I saw something in Eastern Washington, and that must be frightening to be driving along and have fire right next to the highway, or have fire explode right near your home and have to flee. Another reason why people are fleeing their homes because of so-called natural disasters, which are, of course, exacerbated by human cause climate change. So John is back. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello, Paul. Are you able to hear me this time?
Yeah.
Great. Well, great to hear your voice over all these many years, and keep up the good work. I wanted to just mention in response to your discussion about the Pope and about Native Americans, a meeting that I had, or that Wilbert Slokich had this day before yesterday with representatives of the Catholic Church, the Peace and Justice Committees. We met down at Cascade, or up at Cascade Locks at Thunder Island, and Wilbur discussed the history of salmon in the Columbia River, the great abundance that the tribes had, and then the scarcity that was induced by the federal government and the state governments using the upper river for industrialization and moving the fish to the lower river. But he also talked about the trials and the prison sentences that he and his, some of his fellow fishermen endured over, in his case, 3 years in federal prison for fishing and being blamed for taking 43,000 fish when actually it was fluoride from the aluminum plant up at the Dalles that diverted those fish and resulted in them not being counted.
So wait a second. So this is a history that perhaps a lot of our listeners might not be aware of. So someone got 3 years in prison for, like, fishing? Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Wilbur Slokich and David Sohappy, Leroy Yokash, I think Bruce Jim as well, a whole number of tribal fishers were sentenced or pled on charges of fishing in violation of tribal regulations under federal law. It was a federal law violation because they sold the fish on the other side of the river. So they were charged with Lacey Act violations, and in Wilbur's case, he received 3 years in federal prison. And they were also accused of taking thousands and thousands of fish, which it turns out were diverted from the migration by fluorides from the aluminum plant that's above the Dalles Dam.
And so they scapegoated these Native Americans who've been on their fishing on the river for thousands of years.
You got it.
Yeah.
And he discussed that with them and talked about the possibility of pardon because he's unable, for instance, as a convicted felon, to teach his grandson how to use a rifle or to be with his grandson with a rifle as a result of those charges, as I say, for fishing. He also talked about the history of the Columbia River fishery and the great abundance that the tribes had that was reduced to great scarcity when the feds decided to devote the upper river, the feds and the states, to industrialization and move the fish from the upper river to the lower river into hatcheries. And it was very, very worthwhile. There were probably, I'd say, 90 to 100 Catholic activists who were present for that from all over the country, and they paid close attention.
And what was the occasion of this meeting?
The occasion was a meeting of the of Catholic peace and justice activists that's occurring in Portland this week.
Uh-huh.
And Tom Markgraf was one of the people who helped to organize it. They had buses that took people out to, they took them on a tour of the gorge, but the first stop was Cascade Locks, where they heard from Wilbur and heard that story, both of the history as well as for his own personal history of dealing with fishing rights.
Well, that was just an incredibly timely call-in then, given, as you said, what I was talking about. That's it's really interesting. And then, you know, of course, the Pope, in addition to apologizing for treatment of the Waldensians, which is a small chapter that I'm aware of, and probably not too many people are, but he also apologized down in, I'm not sure if it was in Paraguay or Bolivia, for the treatment of indigenous peoples, which is kind of interesting.
So it all seems to fit together, and it's great that we have a Pope who's now talking about protecting the earth as well as getting us all to heaven. So
yeah, it's encouraging. Again, you know, I'm not, you know, don't have great faith in these huge, large institutional leaders, but I mean, somebody's got to take some leadership here, and you know, what the heck? He's in a position to do something, so.
Well, he did, and as a result, I think the Catholic activists that were present at Thunder Island and Cascade Locks really listened very closely to what Wilbur was saying.
Uh-huh.
I think they've taken it to heart, and hopefully we can get some more education, but also see if we can get Wilbur Slokish a pardon, along with some of his fellow fishermen.
Yeah. So is there any like current, you know, issues specifically relating to the gorge you want to flag for us? Or
well, of course, the current issues there, the short-term current issues, the current issues are the coal trains and the oil trains. But the big issue is how are we going to rebuild abundance in the upper river? As Wilbur said the other night, he said, when we got to a million fish, everyone was ready to celebrate. I'm not going to celebrate until we have 15 or 30 million fish, he said, because that's what is required under the treaties. Those treaties require the federal government to protect the right to take fish at all usual and accustomed fishing places for the tribes. And those accustomed fishing places are throughout the, particularly the upper river, where they have been, where the fish have been removed either into hatcheries or removed by obstructions. And part of the effort, I think, that Wilbur really made a point of is that we want to get abundance, true abundance, in the upper river for both the ecosystems as well as for the people.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for John. Let's give some other people a chance to call in. Appreciate that.
Keep up the good work, Paul.
All right. And, of course, speaking of Cascade Locks, there is, of course, the Nestle water bottling plant, the scandalous proposal for a major international corporation that is stealing water from drought-stricken California and all across the country. And they would like to come into the our backyard here, the Columbia River Gorge, and take water, which also involves a fish hatchery there, too. Anyway, flag that issue for people? I know BARC and other groups are working on that. Let's go to our next caller. Kyle, go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning, Paul. How are you?
Good. How are you? You're kind of echoey there. I don't know what's going on.
I'm sorry. I just wasn't near the phone. I'm working.
So. Oh, there you go. Much
now
better.
I'm not working, and I'm closer to the phone. Yeah, I enjoy your talk this morning, and there's so many things that are on the agenda to talk about that it just boggles the mind. One of the things that I've been thinking about lately, though, that I thought I might put out there on the air, maybe get some answers back, is, you know, oh gosh, where do I start? It's a big subject. Arms manufacturing. Arms manufacturing and the capital that it generates for countries that generate those arms, and who deals with those arms, who actually gives the okay to sell such arms to other countries, and when. And we hear about it all the time, but it really isn't. I mean, people don't really, it isn't really spelled out, you know, what kind of economy those arms, what do they provide to the economy, and who makes them, and where are they made, and how many people are employed doing it. You know, statistics that I think we need to start looking at, because, you know, these arms all too often are found in all kinds of people's hands that we didn't intend them to be. Not only that, but we use them over other people's heads. I believe right now, and it's just a theory, that, you know, I don't think that Israel really wants to see Iran become nuclear free. They want to have some enemies, because I think one of their major exports is, again, arms.
So Kyle, I, you know, there is so much stuff to talk about. What I try to do on this program is really focus on issues that touch us directly, that have some link to our lives here. And not obviously that does, but I mean, are there arms manufacturers in the Pacific Northwest locally? Is there, how, you know, what sort of actions can we take to address what you're talking about?
Well, I first think that we need to be educated upon how prevalent it is, how many of them are being made, and where.
Okay.
And I don't know that, and I don't know where to go to find that.
Okay, well, maybe you should do some of that research, and would love
That's why I'm on the air here, so
okay.
I can maybe generate some speak, so maybe other people can call and say, well, gee, there's a great book out by so-and-so, or there's research done by yada yada, you know what I'm
okay.
saying?
Yeah, yeah, great.
Opening up those lines of communication. See, either that or I talk about the 900 nuclear power plants on the planet that will someday doom us whether we do anything or not.
There is a lot to talk about. And so if anyone out there has information on what Kyle brought up, feel free to call up and share it with our engineer.
And I'd just like to give a shout out to my wonderful girlfriend, Jen, who's out in St. Helens right now delivering our postal mail for us. And
All right.
Really appreciate that. Thank you, Jen. I love you.
All right. Well, thank
All
you,
right,
Kyle.
Paul.
Okay.
Have
appreciate that.
Day.
You too. So, there's so much going on and seemingly so little time. I want to flag an article that I just read a couple days ago called Turn Up the Heat on Climate Change by Lance Simmons. I can't read where this came from, but it's an author of The Evolution of a Revolution, www.lancesimmons.com. Just read the first paragraph here. Well, there you go again, you wacky scientists spinning their wild tales of impending disaster and doom, all to advance their ultra-liberal social agenda, which includes abolition of capitalism as we know it, forcing people to actually interact with one another by living close to one another, instituting mass transportation regimes, which once again force people to interact with one another. Oh, the humanity, the horror. Damn you who conspire to destroy this happy little piece of paradise that we have worked so hard to secure for ourselves. Don't worry about the climate. Weather changes all the time. It will just be fine. Anyway, this is a kind of a provocative little piece. Yes, things are heating up dramatically. We are having forest fires where we never had fires before. There's a risk of just, you know, any little spark across the drought-stricken West here to cause a conflagration. And we are not prepared because we're not psychologically prepared because people are just not, I mean, it just takes one person to throw a cigarette butt or start a campfire in a bad place or not put it out. It's really dangerous. And we're not educate, you know, our entire system is not set up to really educate us about the situation we're in. We are like in such deep cultural denial in general. I mean, there are little happy islands to some extent, Portland is, but even we are not doing enough, despite Charlie Hales going, speaking of the Pope and meeting with the Pope at the Vatican. It's all very interesting. It all seems to be coming together. But we need to be doing so much more, and we can't wait for our leaders. I mean, it is great that, you know, there is some sign of even leadership waking up, but we need to discuss all this stuff so much more. I just want to, before we go to our next, we have a full slate of callers. I just want to flag this one thing, and we're kind of moving right along here. I heard a really excellent program on Oregon Public Broadcasting yesterday. Yes, they do some good stuff as well. I have a lot of criticisms of them, especially their support by the fossil fuel industry, which we need to talk more about. But they actually had a really thorough discussion of gray water. Now, what does gray water have to do with all this? Well, I mean, the fact that we're now in a drought here in the Pacific Northwest, where it supposedly is, rains all the time, should be of great concern. And but the flagrant wasting of water and the entire way our infrastructure is set up to waste water by not reusing water in our houses, in our buildings. We need to, you know, talk about the green economy and job creation through sustainability. Well, Charlie Hales and the Water Bureau and everybody else, we need to completely re-gear our plumbing so that we reuse our water twice, three times. And yeah, that's really important. Let's get committees together. Let's get our neighborhood advisory groups to address this urgent situation. Let's get you know, collective mini reservoirs in our neighborhoods to pool our water, free rain barrels for all, et cetera, et cetera. Let's do it, folks. It is time. So let's go to our next caller. Marley, you're on the air.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
So I wanted to call in because I just wanted to comment on, you know, I hear people commenting all the time on how Oregon and the Pacific Northwest is now in a drought and how it coincides with, quote unquote, the California drought. And I think people fail to recognize that there's not a difference between Southern Oregon and Northern California. We're all connected here. And
what, you mean the state borders aren't like actually natural?
And it goes beyond that. I mean, we're in a drought. The Sao Paulo, Brazil is in a drought. The Siberia is in a drought. This is not a California drought. This is a world drought. NASA, a leading water scientist at NASA at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, quote unquote, he says the situation is critical and that a third of the world's largest groundwater basins are being rapidly depleted. And, you know, we're looking at this, and this touches on the last caller of what they was talking about, the fisheries in the Northwest. You know, this is a global thing. This is happening literally everywhere in the world. And we seem to think about this, you know, in a short-term kind of idea of just ourselves, when it's like we have a whole nother generation of children, and we have to think about if things are like this now, what is this going to be like in 20 years for the 1 and 2 year olds right now, and in 30 years, and at that point you have to start thinking about world population. And if there's no water and the population of the earth is out of control in 30 years, we have a real serious problem, and nobody seems to be addressing it. And again, you know, we keep looking at it as these isolated situations. It's not isolated.
Well, let's talk about this nobody seems to be addressing it, because that's an issue I kind of wanted to start out this program by talking about. And Kyle's point about arms production, I just sort of want to flag that, is in terms of like priorities, we've got, you know, when we had Fukushima happened, and what we needed was a worldwide collective response to that incredibly terrifying disaster. We needed experts, all the best nuclear experts from around the world. We needed corporations to bring in their expertise. Everybody, we needed a coordinated international response. What was going on were wars in Syria, wars in Libya, wars in Afghanistan and Iraq still. This climate change is of a similar import. What we need is a collective response. And what we do is we continue to manufacture arms, have these insane ideological debates, these insane territorial struggles. And we just not, there is no global system designed for it. I guess that I'm sort of getting to your point. No one in the sense of there is no coordinated global response. The United Nations is mired in hopeless politics. It could be a better force for change. Anyway, that's a long response to what you just said.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I did actually want to touch on that a little bit too, and it comes back to, you just have to follow the money, and what it comes back to is that you have to look at who is making the weapons and who is building the nuclear power plants, and who is doing that is America and Russia. And so it really kind of ties back to what we have is a global weapons economy, and without that, there is no economy for anyone. And why isn't the mass media not talking about Fukushima? Because we're the ones who helped them build their nuclear power plants and vice versa. You know, and that's pretty much what that comes down to.
Right. So there's, as Jim Page says, no one can do it for us. So there are people who are doing things. There are people on the grassroots level. And that's the thing. That's the point, is that our human nature is not made to deal with these large abstract nation states and global systems. We need to do our best to address it at that level, but we need to scale things way down. We need to take it at our level. So we need to
bring it back to local and to our level. You know, the Sierra Nevadas have literally 0% snowpack. The Klamath Basin has 0% snowpack. We have like 5% snowpack up here. You know, and again, to illustrate the point that there is no California, quote unquote, or Pacific Northwest, quote unquote, drought. This is a drought that goes from beyond into from Mexico to Canada and beyond. And so again, you know, we need to, we're blessed here in Portland Basin here because we get a lot of our water from rain, which hasn't been quite normal either, but still the rest of the state and the rest of the surrounding states are all in droughts.
All right.
And,
well, listen, let's,
you know, and again, we need to seriously start thinking about this on the term of our children and our children's children, or, you know, there's not going to be a future.
I think we need to think of it for ourselves at this point as a matter of survival, but we got a couple other callers.
I disagree completely. I think that we need to stop thinking about ourselves, and we need to start thinking about our kids, or they're not going to have a future.
No, I don't think we can pit the generations against each other. I just think it's even more urgent than just thinking about, I think it's a matter of like the people living right now, all of us, and I think we can't leave it to our kids. So anyway,
there's a great book I wanted to just reference real quick, and people should check it out. It's called The Limits to Growth, and it was written originally in the late 60s, I think. There was an update, and the projected population of Earth on 2050 is 9.5 billion. We estimate that if we maximize production and sustainability, that this planet can support 9 billion people. We have a serious, serious problem with the math there.
And thank you very much.
With that
okay. Too. And we got a couple other callers. Let's go to our next one. Harvey, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Paul. Well, I'd like to speak about the drought and some possible solutions. First of all, it turns out that coal, natural gas, oil, and nuclear are second only to agriculture in their daily consumption of our America's freshwater resources. And solar panels, once manufactured and installed, use no water over their 22 to 25-year warranty. So I say we get on to solar as fast as possible if we want to save water. And then if you plug your electric car into your solar electric rooftop, well, it takes about 100 gallons of water to make 1 gallon of gasoline. So by moving to electric car, you're saving a lot of water there too. And I had an idea. I call it, for where you are, I call it the aquasolar panel. And you know these touch screens on computers and cell phones where you tap them and everything changes? Well, they're what is known as piezoelectric. Piezo meaning pressure to electricity. And so what they do is they embed these piezoelectric material inside of a transparent glass or plastic sheet. So I'm thinking that I looked up piezoelectric rooftop, and it turns out that the rain falling on a rooftop, a piezoelectric rooftop, would generate electricity. Hmm. So I thought of a transparent piezoelectric touchscreen for the solar panel, so that when it rains a lot, the drops, the power of the drops falling on a rooftop full of solar panels, will create electricity for when it's raining, as well as the solar panel, the photovoltaic panel under the touchscreen. So I call it the aqua solar panel. It's good for rainy areas as well as sunny areas. And those are some of the ways to go. There's also, of course, atmospheric water collection or atmospheric water generation. If you go to Google, it turns out that these devices are basically like dehumidifiers. They pull water from the air, and then they put it through filters, and so you can just have drinking water. There's a lot of companies out there that make them. If you go to atmospheric water generator companies, you can read about the stats, and it's a open cycle, so the water is used and then returned back to the earth, and it's like owning your own private cloud. So those are some of the solutions to saving water in the with the drought going on.
No, those are all great. I mean, I tend to be one who's a little bit leery of sort of technological fixes, because I think one of the main things we need to do is get over our like individual separation and actually collectivize things, like not have each our own individual washer and dryer, not have, you know, all these replication of things. And, you know, again, we could tie together our rooftop water collection into sort of collective. We, you know, there's all sorts of solutions that there's just too much repetition, too much waste. But that said, there's just this kind of stasis of innovation and all this incredible creative ideas out there that needs to be unleashed and is suppressed, you know, because of this corporate monopoly on how to, you know, on infrastructure and on ways to make energy and such. So yeah, no, I think free all collective inventive ideas, and let 1,000 solar panels bloom and all that. I think those are all great things, but I think they need really to be done on a really local and community based level as well. There needs to be like centers for innovation, community centers for innovation.
I think there's ideas out there. Just unleash it. The creative mind is mankind's biggest asset.
Right on. Okay, well, thank you so much for calling.
Thanks, Paul.
All right. And we have a couple more callers. Next one up is Sean. Hello.
Hey, good morning, Paul.
Good morning.
Wow, I'm overwhelmed. There's a lot. People have brought up a lot of issues that, you know, I'll try to cover my ground. But the first thing is the key word is what you just said, is community. And people coming up with their individual ideas, because also you had mentioned earlier that we need to find leadership or look for leadership, and I say we don't look for leadership because it's the leaders that have brought us to this very point, that it's people that really need to look to each other to lead the leaders, because really it's been over the centuries accumulative that have added up to this very place that we have, you know, found ourselves in. And, you know, that kind of ties right into the whole issue of the Pope and the encyclical and so forth, because, you know, it's fine that he said his certain things to try to save face and make people feel better about, acknowledging some minor things, let's say, that the church has been involved in. But let's keep in mind that, you know, it's not enough for the Pope to acknowledge a couple of cultures and a couple of places for maybe how they've treated them, because the church, along with government, over the last 500-600 years has played an implicit part into the very place that we have found ourselves in again, in terms of overall poverty. And
I'm looking for the Pope, you know, to, if he wants to do something concrete about these issues that he's talking about, the whole church's stance on contraceptives and abortion would be really good places to start.
Yeah, but I think that's really minor in compared to what the church really needs to own up to.
Well, I don't know about that. I don't know about that. I don't want to, you know, put a hierarchy of values. I think those are not at all minor.
I'm not saying they're not important, but what I'm getting at is that I think that the church overall, I'm realizing that the modern church doesn't have so much to do, let's say, in playing the role of certain choices they made hundreds of years ago. But to acknowledge the larger role and the extent that they've played into creating the very poverty that he's talking about that is so bad in the world, let's talk about the incredible amount of money that the church has made over centuries in helping governments plunder other countries.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it's vast. It's vast. And the amount of wealth they still hold.
Really acknowledging on a larger level the very part that they have played in creating the very things they're saying that are so wrong in the world, as though they're still somehow detached from it.
No, but, you know, I think that one of the, you know, these are complex questions. You know, you can go back and forth on what his, you know, what role he's playing and stuff. But, you know, the Vatican II Council that really opened things up, it helped create a new generation of Catholics who opened up people's thinking. So it's kind of a ripple effect. You know, I think the caller, John's caller, call earlier about, you know, these Catholic Peace and Justice activists. Uh-huh. I mean, I think they're feeling energized. I mean, I think it's just, there just needs to be energy coming from all different places. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to, you know, put any Pope up on a pedestal and say that they're doing a great job or whatever. But I think a figure like that and what he's doing does seem to open up space. And I think that's important.
Yeah, I do. And that's why I said, though, is that they need to acknowledge overall it would help if they acknowledge their larger role in playing into the overall effect of what their actions have made right up to this point. So I'm just making that because there's a couple of things. So in relation to that, though, that I want to recommend a couple of great books. One that'll help a previous caller who had called about the arms race,
mm-hmm.
and specifically a great book that he should read, which was written just a couple of years ago, is Andrew Einstein's book called The Shadow World.
Mm-hmm.
Or actually, I'm sorry, not Einstein, Feinstein, Andrew Feinstein,
mm-hmm.
and it's called The Shadow World, and that's an excellent book that will pretty much answer all his questions in regards to that.
Okay.
The other book that really I think a lot of people are not very familiar with the author and the book as well, and it's actually probably one of the most fantastic books out there that will give an overall picture of how long neoliberal politics and economics has really been going on and how it's helped to create the kind of system that we have. But Eduardo Galeano came out, wrote a book, ironically, just before Pinochet took power in Chile in 1973. But the book is called Open Veins of Latin America.
Oh, yeah. Hugely influential.
And, you know, the title, so-called, can be deceiving because it really doesn't have so much to do with Latin America. But overall, it brings it right up to the present of what one of his last chapters is called The Contemporary Plunder. And it really shows that not only the U.S., but where they got the idea for neoliberal politics, that definitely also played very much into the part of the Spanish crown, and again, how the church played into that, and how that affected the plundering of not only Latin America, but all of Latin America, which we're talking South America, right? I mean, we're talking all the way up from the tip of South America right up to Mexico, and how that plays a part into global politics and economics right up to today.
Oh, yeah, and it's a hugely important region, yeah.
40 years old, right?
Yeah.
And so there's been discussion that really, in a way, modern times, that our form of neoliberal politics that we have right now, which has played a great part into the global climate change and so forth, is that in Naomi Klein's book, Shock Economics,
The Shock Doctrine, yeah.
Really started with Chile and the overthrow of Pinochet.
Right,
but
right.
This book really plays a larger role into showing how long this has actually been going on.
Well, great. Well, those are...
Anyway, so my last comment, though, has to do with that, keep in mind, as much as there are the industrialists and people out there who want to deny global climate change, to keep in mind that the CIA, and they have done the studies, and they know already what they're anticipating, what wars and things are going to be fought in that regard, and they're planning for that. And it's also the very reason why NASA has been sending ships and, you know, explorers out even onto comets, literally to find the elements on the comets, is what the very elements make up the atmosphere on this planet. And they literally are doing that to try to find places where they can take the elements off of those comets and try to eventually create a new living atmosphere on other planets, because this is the very thing they anticipate.
It is an insane venture. Instead of actually changing the way we do things, they just continue this mad process of expansion out, even beyond. Yes, well, it's a mad world. Is that?
Yeah, that's
film?
Why it's not counting on the leadership, but our own leadership, because
I agree.
They know what they're doing, and instead of wanting to really change, they want to scrape the very last resources out of this planet, and are already looking to want to try to create it somewhere else, even though that very plan, if they can do it, it won't take but for a few more hundred years or however long it'll take before all those elements come together to make another livable planet.
All right. Well, thank you so much. We got a couple other callers, and we got about 3 minutes left. I appreciate your call. All right. We got time for maybe one last caller. James, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning. So just real quick, I kind of want to expand on what the last caller was saying. I definitely appreciate that the Pope is making a huge effort in trying to inform people on the danger of climate change, because I feel like for too long the church has just been kind of preaching that there's a second coming and the new world's coming and we don't have to worry about the problems of the first world. But, you know, recognizing that that's been preached for, you know, thousands of years. So we need to start looking at now, you know, and I'm glad that he's doing that. But I also agree with the caller that, you know, he needs to be, you know, that, you know, while this is important, you know, but also recognizing the problems that the church has also caused, other than, you know, giving people kind of the mentality that they don't have to have responsibility in this world. So anyways, no, I appreciate the topic you're talking about, and thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you for calling. Yeah, I mean, I'm talking more about the Pope as an individual. You know, he occupies a role, but I'm just looking at him as a person who's, you know, in this one place, and I don't know. You know, maybe it's all, he's going to turn out to be, you know, a big disappointment, and maybe doesn't have that much, and we probably don't need to talk about him that much. But we have one more caller. Sonny, you're on the air.
Yeah, hey, here's an idea for a solution. It's got to be neighbor to neighbor. Get to know your neighbors if you're still brave enough. And, you know, maybe there's an elderly person that would feed the birds on your block, and maybe there's somebody else that could keep a soup pot going, and maybe there's somebody else that can give people rides back and forth to the doctor, and try to coalesce as much as you can. Can't do it in my neighborhood, ironically, half Indian as I am. I'm not pagan enough for my neighbors. But anyway, that's ironic. Then the other thing is, we're not living under toxic patriarchy. We are living under a patriarchal death cult. And the way we can reverse things is to own that we need nurturance, and we do love bonding. Men love bonding. Women love bonding. Let's get out from under the patriarchal death cult.
All right. Well, that's a powerful note to end on. I appreciate that. And the strains of Jim Page in the background signal that we are just about out of time. On Sonny's note, there is a launch for the Village Network, which is a support for aging in place, helping elders stay in their homes and supporting each other, and young people supporting them. And that's going to launch this fall, the Village. I will talk probably more about that in upcoming shows. Again, call me at the front desk if you want any information about all these events coming up, or you just want to chat. 503-231-8032 is that number. Glad I'm back. Thank you for listening. This is KBOO Community Radio 90.7. My name is Paul. Wednesday Talk Radio. See you next week. There's a fire in the forest. We can't just let it burn. No one can do it for us. This much I've learned. There's a fire in the forest. Can you drink your water? Can you breathe your air? Is there an unendangered species anywhere? Is there a land unthreatened by this historical machine? Is there a better vision? Can we find it in our dream? With the fire in the forest, we can't just let it burn. And no one can do it for us. This much I've learned. With the fire in the forest. Talk about the future. Talk about a million.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the summer concert in Dawson Park, featuring a live performance by Bamba y su Pilon da Sucar Band on Wednesday, July 29th at 6:30 p.m. The mission of summer concerts in the park is to bring cultural diversity to metropolitan area residents. Bamba y su Pilon da Sucar Band play a full range of popular and traditional salsa, son cubano, timba, and tropical styles as cumbia, merengue, y bachata. Again, that's the summer concert in Dawson Park with Bamba y su Pilon da Sucar Band on Wednesday, July 29th at 6:30 p.m. Dawson Park is located at North Stanton and North Williams Avenue in Portland. More information about ticket prices and directions can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.